Thanks for tuning into this episode of PageCast, presented by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Today's episode features We Were Perfect Parents Until We Had Children by Vanessa Raffaele and Karen Shimka. Having kids is a baffling endeavor, beset with sulk, meltdowns, anxiety, and disappointment. And that's just the parents. When you get that call to the principal's office, when the school acceptances don't come, when the bedroom door slams shut and you hear your child sobbing behind it. All awful, but it's also a precious time, both hellishly challenging and full of joy. The trick? To find a way to enjoy our families, love our children and believe in them, and to laugh. In this book, Vanessa Raffaele and Karen Shimka have gathered experiences and insights from the village members. These are the gems and remedies from the real parenting experts, the parents who help raise your family in your own perfectly imperfect way. In this episode, Vanessa is in conversation with Cape Talk radio host and parent of two, Lester Kivit. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to PageCast. My name is Lester Kivit. I host Good Morning Cape Town with Lester Kivit on Cape Talk. And today I'm speaking to Vanessa Raffaele along with co-author, co-writer Karim Shinka, have produced what could only be a collection of stories, anecdotes, but also advice, not just between the two of them, but from more than 60,000 participants on the online group called The Village. And it's a book called We Were Perfect Parents Until We Had Children. 60,000 village families share their wisdom. And having kids battles and it baffles parents with their sulks, their meltdowns, their anxieties. And of course, there's often sometimes disappointment. It's like when you get that call to come to the principal's office, when the school doesn't accept your application, when the bedroom door slams and you hear the child sobbing behind on the other side of the door. It feels often awful. It often feels hopeless. But what do? You ask for advice. You ask for advice from people who know. And in this book, Vanessa and Karim Shimka, they gather the experience and the insights from the village members. It's an online group that started with humble beginnings and then grew to this thousands of members and participants of people with similar stories, similar backgrounds. And it's these gems and these remedies from real parenting experts, parents themselves that have helped raise their own families and gives a little bit of guidance. So I am joined here with me, Vanessa Raffaele, publisher, business person, novelist, and of course, your most important job, a mom and a parent. Thanks so much for joining me, Vanessa.
Thank you, Lester. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, let's start with the story of The Village, an online community across various social media networks. You've been asked this many times over the number of years that The Village has been around. What's the genesis? What's the seed? What is the moment that you think, let me register an account and let me talk to other parents who may be in a similar position and I am?
Well, if you talk to me, you get one story. You talk to my oldest daughter, you get another. So let's go with her because we're talking parenting. She says she was the most terrible teenager ever born and that I had to get help. So I gathered an army because in her opinion, that's what it required. And actually, there is a shred of truth in that. I did realize at the time when I left my last career that I would need to find another space and a space in the media. And I thought that to do that in the best way possible would be to find a space where human beings could gather around a common goal and somewhere where I could create trust and honesty and authenticity, because what I saw then, and that was 7 years ago, already a breakdown in the media in the form of polarization, a breakdown of trust, a breakdown of truth. So I thought one of the spaces where human beings probably could gather around a shared idea, a diverse group of human beings could do that, would be around the most humbling period in our life, which is actually when we try to parent teenagers. And I did it as an experiment, hoping that I would be able to create something that would be helpful. But I also was very prepared for it to fail because what I saw around me was a lot of conflict. And also on social media, a lot of showing off, a lot of competition, a lot of the lack of truth. But actually, the village has grown and grown and grown. And as it's grown from, it now is across all its platforms, over 250,000 people. What's stayed the same is the fact that there is a common thread of help and decency and trying to be constructive about other people's families. So our mission statement is South African parents gathering together to try and create a better future for everyone's children, not just yours, everyone's.
Now, I've managed a WhatsApp group of five friends, and sometimes it is literally a 24-hour job trying to manage expectations and manage tempers. How do you do so with a group just on Facebook, more than 60,000 people across all social media platforms, 200,000 people? One could argue it's almost as difficult as raising teenagers trying to manage adults who are trying to play nice on the internet.
What's interesting is I think the one truth that I stumbled on is that we are really in need. I mean, the way we live now, communities are broken and human beings are happier sitting under a tree, really shelling peas, talking to each other, gathering after a day's work, watching other people's children, listening to other people's elders. That's how we're meant to be. But yet across the world and also in South Africa, communities are broken. In South Africa, we go back, even before COVID, we go back behind our high walls and our security fences. We do not sit in beautiful bars and village squares chatting, open to other people's experiences and opinions. So in creating a virtual space that replicates this, I think I've given something to people in a very humble way that we did not have before. And what has happened in that space is that the members themselves have become guardians of the serenity, of the constructiveness, of the usefulness of that space. So everyone who joins the village joins because they have an authentic need. Everyone joins with the hope of getting some help. It is safe Google for South African parents, so it has a use. But if you don't follow the rules and if you don't commit to the mission, then there are other people who feel that they can police your behavior themselves. So there's nothing about it which is controlled from the top down. It's controlled within. It's true network effect in that the power and the potential of this group is connection. And what I found is has been like a petri dish of an experience to do it, watching this thing, firstly, that you can infect a community with good values, and those good values can be we're here to do something to help each other, but also that you can trust people to monitor and to maintain and to guard their own constructive space as well. And really, that's what's happened. I have 200 volunteers on two WhatsApp groups who watch the group all the time, and who I have 60,000 people on the group itself who will wade in if someone is bullying, trolling, doxing, doing any of the vices that happen on social media. I have a team of very, very brilliant admin who manage it all. And without them, I'd be nowhere.
Don't you want the job as Speaker of the National Assembly? Hurting so many different opinions and theories and philosophies, because that's what parenting is. I would raise my children and the values that I want to espouse as a family may be different from yours. And there may be a case where I believe, no, my way is better because that's how my parents taught me. Or your way could be better because I have a certain viewpoint of the world. There's managing contesting philosophies, but also recognizing that parents have different ways and means of dealing what are universal issues.
If you have respect, if you respect the concept of disagreeing agreeably, if you also respect certain guidelines, there are some things which we have learned through hard experience you cannot discuss on the village. Unfortunately, religion and politics are one of those. But if you also accept that religion and politics can be left to adults to decide themselves. And you maintain every other form of space as available within the confines of dinner party rules, i.e. you are in someone else's house. You talk to each other with respect. And then also being aware and conscious of the issues that do derail community. So bullying, I said this already, but bullying, doxing, trolling, pile-ons, all of those things are actually unconstructive. They can be. We've done that experiment already. We know they don't work. So on the village, that kind of behavior is not allowed. So it's not actually a democracy. And that's why, for one very clear reason, I could never be the Speaker of the House. It's not a democracy. It's a community that requires certain rules and respect to stay on track and to do the job it needs to do, which is to provide assistance, a safety net, somewhere to go, somewhere you can go with an open mind to an open heart, with no fear of being judged, with no fear of being mocked, with no fear of being outperformed, where every parent has got a right to ask their questions. That is, I have found, has been a space that's been worth protecting.
Is parenting a democracy? Is the relationship between a young human and an older human in the social construct of parent and child, is that a democracy?
That's such an interesting question, and no one has ever asked me. I think parenting is fluid. I think it changes. Any parent who gives over power to a toddler is absolutely barking mad and looking for trouble. But equally, a parent who looks at a rebellious, unhappy, disrespectful, stroppy teenager and doesn't give that person respect, oxygen, and their own right to express themselves, doesn't listen to what they're saying, is equally actually barking down the wrong path.
I would argue that a parent who gives in to a toddler maybe just wants 15 minutes
of sleep.
Of sleep, or just to fix a quick meal. But this book is primarily focuses on the later years of childhood life. It is the adolescent teenage years. Why focus on that aspect when you have, I would say, from conception to 18 years old, of you needing to guide, look after, care, feed, clean a child? Why focus a book that focuses on sort of the latter part of a young human life?
Because I think that was the loneliest and the most lost time of parenting. It has been for many, many. You can be more scared. You can be more insecure. You can be more lost as a parent when your child is out of your immediate control, is not the right word, but care. And what happens is that teenagers start expressing their need to be their own people in this crazy and scary world that we live in. In the book, we actually say South Africa is a tough place to raise independent, feisty kids. I mean, you know, your instinct could be to protect them, but their need to rebel against you, to sever that cord, happens at a time when you may believe they're not prepared. And I felt that was really when we needed the most help from outside. I mean, the other thing about small kids is that there's a lot of advice out there. You know, you get a lot of advice when you're a new parent, whether it's from other parents or whether it's from masses of books and podcasts and blogs, and it's an industry. But I think I always say to my children, I've got three. I was bald. I have three. As if by the time I had three, I was defeated. You know, there's a sense of, and also there's much more shame because the stakes are so high. Like if you have a child who is playing up, that child can embarrass you, can affect your life, their own life. And my feeling was that it was much more cloaked in loneliness, parenting a teen, than it was when the kids are small. So it was an opportunity, I felt, to do something where there was a space for it to grow. And it seems that it has.
I want to focus on the book in a little while, but I just want to just focus on the movement. At what point do you realize that, wait, this is more than just a pet project of growing a small close-knit community and then letting it mushroom, at what point do you realize there may be something more than just an online support group here? There may be a portal for almost real-time advice, assistance. Heck, there may be a book in here.
I think COVID changed everything. I mean, suddenly, when we talked about being isolated and alone, we really were, and we were alone with our children, but yet we were not, because I also feel profound gratitude for all of these. I always say I have 60,000 friends, because that's what it felt like. It felt like beyond our masks, beyond our walls, in our isolation, we had this feeling of connectivity and had a sort of magic during COVID. And what I heard more than ever from people who were a part of this community was, I don't feel so alone. And when you start hearing that, you actually start feeling it as well as an individual, you get a feeling of profound gratitude, which is something different from maybe seeing an opportunity or seeing that something works. And so it's little acts of grace and gratitude that I felt myself that made me think that this was something quite different.
Vanessa, I've been a very big admirer of your work and your career. Apologies to age you a little bit, but my mum would have a stack of Cosmos, and sometimes, and maybe it had contributed to my greater worldview, and I would read your columns, and I'm very familiar with the Raffaele name. I'm very familiar with Karen's work as a writer and a poet as well, and who I greatly admire. But it's not just the two of you. Something like 250 voices are represented in this book. It is a piece of work with the two of yours names on, but how do you then decide, okay, these are the people, these are the conversations, these are the questions that we think are important? What do you decide to include? What do you decide to exclude?
The most incredible thing about the village is that every day you realize, you are told, it's a ticker tape to a family's life. So whatever the themes are that are preoccupying families in South Africa and around the world, because we have spread at the moment, hits you in the face. You wake up in the morning, you will see what people are worrying about, laughing about, despairing about. So after over 7 years, it was actually quite easy to tip into the top line of the headlines of family life with teenagers. And in terms of the voices, often they pop up themselves because you remember. I mean, someone's story is so powerful because they're not preaching to you. They're not telling you off. They're not telling you. They're just sharing their stories. And I'm such a believer in storytelling. That's also how human beings are supposed to impart knowledge. So it allows people to tell their own family stories. And those are sometimes profound, sometimes funny, sometimes insightful. And for me, the most amazing thing in this humble little book, because it's a humble book. It's not setting itself up. It's just the truthfulness of people's stories. And again, open heart to open mind. That makes it so unique. It's not a guru. It's not anyone waving their finger at you. It's just families telling you their stories. So they have a way of popping up and sticking, lodging in your mind, maybe because that's how we're meant to impart these kind of truths. Some of them come from grandparents. Some of them come from parents with younger children. Some of them come in the minute. Some of them come from memories. But it's very, very human and humane as well.
Conversations like gender and sexuality have been had for decades, for eons. What do you think is a new conversation? In your book, you focus a great deal on the important conversation of money, for example. Also something that has been around for eons, but that I think is a very, very important conversation that many parents do not have. And there's an element of shame, there's an element of keeping up with the Joneses, there's definitely class and status and status, and the economics of having and providing also comes into it. But is that a conversation that we don't necessarily have? We've become very sensitized, we've become very sensitized to talking about gender and sex, but I don't necessarily think people talk enough about finances.
One of the interesting things about our generation of parents is we are parenting across massive chasm divides, more so than I think many generations. We've had two revolutions. Industrial, we're facing the AI revolution. Digital and the industrial revolution. We're parenting across a millennia. Many of us are creatures of the last millennia. Our children are very much of this. We might even be early on. There is a massive gap and a massive change in terms of how we parent versus how our own parents parent. That being said, the same threads pick up all the time. We are always meant to be challenged by events around us and by our children, right? That's just the way it goes. So at the moment, what we'll find is that whatever is bubbling up across, from the far distance, and that is coming closer to us from our children, is the most challenging thing. And whether it's money and our own shame and our own disappointment and our own feelings of we should have done better for them, or their different view on money, different view on their careers, whatever it is, it's going to be normally quite conflicting, challenging, something that takes you out of your own way of being. That's just parenting. But at the moment, it's extreme. We did not grow up. My generation did not grow up digital natives. We are not. My generation did not grow up with social media. My generation did not grow up with the lack of self-consciousness in a bad way about telling our friends how much we love them, about not judging our friends for their sexuality or their gender. There is so much on either side which is challenging, but there's so much which is learning. And I think in terms of the broader picture, one of the big changes is to learn from our children, to give them the space to be teachers as well, to also trust ourselves, to sift through what's old, what's relevant, what's wisdom, what's us holding on to our own, what we know, what makes us feel secure, and finding a way to talk to each other. So one of the chapters is called Shouting Across the Abyss. And that is so important at the moment, I think. Maybe not to shout. Maybe we have to just, again, remember to listen across the abyss, to talk across the abyss. And as far as money goes, money is a headline that holds a lot of issues in South Africa. It holds inequality. It holds privilege. It holds lack of opportunity. It holds the horrors of the past. It holds unfairness. It holds frustration and disappointment in the future. And if you're not talking about that stuff, you're not parenting. Certainly if you're not talking to that about with your young adults. Throughout the book, another theme is that we do not walk their path. We walk along their path with them if we're good parents. Sometimes with our mouth shut, sometimes talking, sometimes with our hands clenched because we're so scared. And when we get into those painful subjects and scary subjects, and again, I say money is a headline. When we get into those subjects, underneath money comes the future, my security, my optimism about the future. That's when parenting really comes into line. You have to role model. You have to help that person, that individual find their way. And you have to find a way to talk about painful things in a way that they can hear and make their own decisions.
I've followed the village tangentially. I've worked with producers who are members, who are parents. But I've also, what I get from the book is that with a membership on Facebook alone of 60,000 people, and looking at class and status and means in South Africa, we of course have people who have means, who are privileged, who have people who are simply making tough decisions simply to make ends meet. And it seems to me this is a book that says it's okay if you're a parent whose question is, which school do I send my child to? Because I have options, I have choice. Where do we go on holiday? To a parent, say, I'm in dire straits. You try to create this level playing field, which notes that all parents, and I say all parents, questions are important. You pay a great deal of attention on the pages and in the book to saying that all parents' decisions are important to them, regardless of the level of class, status and privilege in South Africa. How do you try and create that balance?
Without a doubt. I mean, there is something absolutely magical about the South African individual. We are very robust, very resilient. We're not known for our sophistication or our access to culture, wider culture, or even the world. But yet there is something so magical about that runs through all of us. And I think that's why South Africans can do very well. But at its heart is self-respect. And one of the experiences I write about in the book is we were very privileged, and I'm sorry to name drop, but it was quite exciting, to work with Oprah Winfrey for 10 years. And when we were researching the book, researching the business, we did lots and lots of surveys about the potential market for the Oprah magazine, which we were launching. And one of the questions we asked was, who do you admire most? And it was asked across a wide demographic of women, not the traditional privileged southern suburbs reader that we were hoping to speak to. And I was like, why are we asking this question? It's going to be Madiba. And they were like, no, we must ask this question, the market research company. And the answer was my mother. And what I think is so poignant and so strong and so meaningful in that message was many of those women that we were asking were first generation from mothers who had sacrificed in the most meaningful and unfair way, left them to be migrant laborers, left them with grandparents, left them because they had no option, left them to raise other women's children. And yet that level of respect and that level of acknowledgement of what a parent is has clearly got absolutely nothing to do with money. So one of the questions in there as well is, can you be a better parent if you are wealthy? And there, of course, is no easy answer to that. It does help to be privileged. And we can't ignore the fact that privilege in this country is very real and unfairness is very real. But what we talk about is humanity and about the connection between mother and child, father and child, guardian and child, because also in this country, you can't take it for granted that everyone's going to be living in a convenient little setup. So that notion of the haves and the have-nots is just reflecting the truth, our truth in South Africa. We live in the most unfair society on earth. It doesn't make you a bad parent. Mm. It can make you the most extraordinary parent.
Gosh, you raise that's something that I've thought about for a very, very long time. On the mothers of our now leaders, and I think of people like Tsaki Makozoma or Patrice Motsepe, there was something that must have told their mothers, and when we note the period of apartheid and lack of opportunities and discrimination, but there must have been something about their mothers that said, you know what, Patrice, you know what, Tsaki, you're going to go study. And we're going to work hard to get you in a good school to work for bursaries. We're going to go from door to door. We're going to ask companies for bursaries. And we have a country that's built on the back of men who are migrant laborers in the mines, but also the mothers who have the foresight to say, you, my son or my daughter, you're going to study, learn now in a turbulent period in South Africa's present back then to be a leader of the future. And you imagine that foresight.
So if you imagine from our perspective now, looking at the village and its diversity and who the people are, we pick through all of that. The stories that we hear are rich or poor. The voice in your head, the parental voice in your head, if it is a voice of belief in the face of disaster, because again, whether it's Patrice or whoever it is, there are moments when you look at this child and you think we're heading for disaster. If you can, no matter who your child is, continue to be the voice, the cheerleader in the head, the person at the side of the school field who is looking at you, not pushing you, but looking at you and saying to your dream, you can do it. I'm going to help you. I believe in you. When you are faced with the disappointment that so many parents are, because many of our parents also, we live through the hopes that our children are going to be better and they will disappoint us because that's part of the deal. But if the constant is, I believe in you, I believe in your outcome, it's going to be hard, I won't let you down, that's the magic. I think that's the magic. And not everyone can be that every day of the year. You know, you also are not perfect. But if that is the dream of the parent, and if that's the commitment of the parent, as I said, to try, and that's all we're hoping for, is that we try, because we do say we were not perfect. I think that's the magic. And then also the other thing about that generation of parents, the migrant parents, the cruelty of those women having to raise other people's children, they role modeled. They role modeled everything I spoke about, the resilience, the resourcefulness, the dignity, the not giving up, you know, whether it, and you only need one. You only need one adult. It doesn't even have to be your parent. That's another thing. And the message in this and in the group is, with help, we can try to be that parent, that adult.
You stress that the book is not an authority. It is not a rule book. And every parent has their own style and philosophy. But you have an illustrious career in column writing on sex and sexuality.
How can you say I have an illustrious career in column writing about sex?
I'm sure you must have enjoyed writing about sex, but then you also must have enjoyed writing about parenthood. You say you're not an authority, but you come with a background of at least Lester, having lived a life.
I am old. That's what I say about everything. I'm old. I think that the plates are shifting. I think that we're moving into a time where our gurus, some of them, have proven themselves to be quite problematical. We need to move away from any cult and any blind following and admiration. In fact, I was thinking this morning that the only creatures that kind of lemmings and sheep rush forward following without thought. And we need to be thinking and sharing. So in terms of me, what have I learned? I'm old. I've learned a lot. And I think with age, one of the things, I don't like to write off old people, because I think we have wisdom, we have experience, we have a sense of humor, the most powerful and potent tool of all, you know, perspective and a sense of humor. We also have patience, because we know it's a long and windy road and a zig and a zag, all of that stuff. But I don't elevate, and I think that what's so powerful about this book is all the voices. Because what you do when you read through this book is, some of it doesn't resonate with you. You disagree with some of it. You think, I would never do such a thing. I would never choose that. And that's okay. Because fundamentally, it's not telling you that there is one path. It's just saying that as you make your own path, a path with help is so much better than a path without.
250 contributors in terms of anecdotes and stories. Social media, particularly Facebook, allows for an anonymity function. How many people post anonymously based on the shame that they may feel for any particular question, whether it be dealing with emotions, whether it's financial, whether it be about gender or sexual orientation? They don't know how to handle that out of fear of whatever judgment may come. And what security do you provide?
So most people don't post because of shame. I mean, don't post anonymously because of shame. They post anonymously because they want to protect their children and their families. And we totally respect that. And we are grateful for that, because there is absolutely no need to add in identifying details to get help. You don't need to do that. So in that anonymous function, I'm particularly very grateful for, because before it actually occurred, I was writing every anonymous, I was loading every anonymous post myself.
So because people were messaging you directly. Yeah,
messaging
you please
me direct.
Leave my name out.
Yes. I am Switzerland is all I can say. But I'm so very grateful for that. But what is so interesting is that we post thousands and thousands and thousands. We load thousands and thousands of posts a day, a month. And there are a large percentage of them, due to the nature of the content, are anonymous. The comments, of which there are thousands more, are not. So people are actually very comfortable sharing at the moment, I think, and very much less ashamed than you would think they are, much more eager to help. But you don't have to hand over every single detail of your family's privacy to get help. And that's the most important thing.
What do you think is the most important question and the most important experience that you deal with in this book?
Oh, that's another really good question. Every question's important. I mean, every single question from the most, because it's about the connective tissue that links. But I would say the most important questions are one around which the answers are: listen to your child and respect your child, but back yourself. Whatever question comes that requires that answer, for me, is the most important, because I think there's nothing that can't be solved if you do those three things. Back yourself, listen to your child, respect your child. They are not our puppets. They're not our projects. They are living, breathing human beings who will be battered and bruised, who will disappoint and enrage us. It was not their idea to be put on this planet. So you owe them that path walked together. So whatever question comes, and the most important outcome of any answer, notwithstanding all of those things, I don't feel so alone.
I'm currently in my own life experiencing a six-year-old who, with the introduction of grade R last year, grade one this year, being introduced to other people, friends. There's also social media and YouTube Kids, which we allow in limited quantities. The introduction of SAS. So all of a sudden, I've had a little girl who was very sweet, and all of a sudden now flicks her hairs and says, "Dad, don't be silly." Tell me the difference between that SAS that you start to experience at 6, 7 years old, and all of a sudden a cloud that follows a teenager when they turn 12, 13, 14. There must be worlds apart.
So we have two chapters we have in the book that are absolutely answering that. And that, as you no doubt know, they're important. That's why you asked the question. The one is, it said, "Help, my child has turned into, who is the alien?" I think it's called. That's one. And that deals with 12 to 13. And the other one is feisty girls and sensitive boys. Because when you talk about a sassy girl, that is a joy and that needs to be nurtured. To dismantle so many of our society's ills, you need girls to feel more feisty, more empowered, more entitled to be in the driving seat, and you need boys to feel more entitled to their tenderness. And that is another absolute magic superpower, really, in terms of growing young people. So that area, what you do when your child turns into Gollum in its cave is you have patience, my friend. You pour yourself a stiff whiskey, you sit down very quietly, and you hold your own hand. Because it's buckle up, buckle up, buckle up, buttercup. You're in for a bumpy ride. And that's the other thing is, I have so many people who now, and I've seen so many people come to us honestly despairing, feeling so much worry, so much shame, so much anxiety about their children, because they say their child has either done X, Y, Z, or their child is either X, Y, Z, or someone has said X, Y, Z about their child. Anything you can say about a teenager, they're just a teenager. It's meant to hurt. It's meant to be a mess. It's the process of expressing themselves out of the cocoon that is early childhood. So the only answer to that is make mine a double, buckle up, buttercup. When are we dancing? You cling on to your friends. You're glad you've got 60,000 of them, and this too will pass.
Vanessa, I sometimes think to myself, and I'm going to be painfully honest, I have a boy and a girl. I've never been too keen on boys or boy children, and here's why. And it's what you mentioned about affirming a girl child. And sometimes I think, am I wrong to have cast an aspersion on my small, sweet 2-year-old? Because I saw raising a girl as being positive. I just simply need to give her the tools. I need to encourage a young girl. I can say the world is your oyster. You can shoot for the stars because you can be anything. In this period where I'm far more aware of toxic masculinity, the entitlement of men and boys, I often thought to myself, it's going to be a lot more work. It's easier to tell a girl, yes, you can. But now I have to tell a boy, no, you can't. It does not belong to you. You're not entitled. And sometimes I beat myself up a little bit about it. I'd like your thoughts.
We are raising boys in interesting times, but it is so overdue. And it is the task. And toxic masculinity stews all of us. You know, whenever we have a subject, one of the issues on The Village, which is just, it is guaranteed to create conflict, is on a Monday morning when someone reports bad boy behavior on the group. And what happens then is the mums all stand up. What about the girls? They're also X, Y, and Z. We don't allow names on the group because in the end, we're all struggling with the same issues. As men now need to learn different rules and as women need to access different courages and different powers, we have to find our way there. And we have to find it the same old boring way that we always have had to do it, through hard work. Those ills in society, which when your children are small, you possibly see as external and you also see as being simpler for one gender or the other, they affect us all in complex ways. There's no easy way out. For me, I have raised both boys and girls. I would say they both bring their separate challenges and joys. And what you find as they grow old is a lot of it has nothing to do with whether they're boys or girls. They're just inconveniently shaped human beings who disagree with you, disappoint you, give you sleepless nights, and force you outside of your comfort zone. So whatever you're thinking now is going to be dismantled by that little individual by the time they're 15, 16, 17. And that's both the challenge and the joy of parenting. But it's a huge subject on the group. And to take it away from the abstract and to bring it into real, date rape, drinking, risky behavior, abusive behavior, bullying, alienation, all of these things have boy iterations and girl iterations. The girls have politics and issues within their friend groups. The boys have bullying, loneliness, inability to express themselves. These are the chapter headings as opposed to the headline headings that we deal with on The Village every day. And all I can say is there's generally not an easy solution. There's not an instant solution. Human beings are not meant to be fixed. They are works in their own works in progress. And so as you move along through all of this stuff, what happens is the only thing that often really helps is the two of you holding each other's hand, again, across whatever abyss it is, having each other's backs, parent to child. But those issues are absolutely real and they are there.
There's the motivational speaker, businessman, Gary Vee, and he has a quote that says, develop the self-esteem and the self-confidence of your children in the real world so that they don't try and seek that in the online world. In parents who may be of your generation, what have you seen is the moment where parents say, oh my goodness, I don't know. Okay, we all kind of know how the internet works now, but technology and social media, the apps change almost every 6 months and the controls change. What's the biggest challenge facing parents in an era of social media? Let's focus on difference for girls and different for boys.
Well, it's the same. It's loneliness. Loneliness and social media is the most toxic combination. If you are alienated, if you are insecure, if you are not connected, then you are in danger. You're in danger of being made to feel less by the Instagrams, the influencers, if you're a girl or a boy, you have your nose pushed up against the glass wall that social media is, and you can feel less yourself. If you are a vulnerable boy and you're alone, you can get sucked into all kinds of ills, whether it's porn. I mean, the average first exposure to porn is 11 years old. It's absolutely shocking, 11 years old. You can be lured into extortion schemes. You can be dragged away from real life into the dark hole of gaming. And by the way, I think gaming is quite good. So the big challenge again for parents is to bring the children out into a community. And it doesn't have to be friends. That's one of the big things. Family is a very, very good family and other adults. It's a very good plan B when the friends let you down. The real trick, though, is to understand that all of these ills are there and there's very little we can do to beat them, whether it's an algorithm or whether it's a new app or whether it's a new evil, a vice, some person, some new scam that's coming your way. If you are vulnerable, if you are alone, if you are that one zebra or wildebeest that's dragging behind the pack, behind the herd, you're going to be in trouble. So the answer is always to reach out. The answer is always to reach out and include. And funny enough, that's the advice I'm now giving about lonely children and all the ills, our social ills. It's also the task that we have to other parents. So instead of competitive parenting, which is what has been, I think, the norm, is actually standing on the side of a water polo pool and screaming for your child to beat someone else and thinking of another person as competition. It's not. It's to think of them as help. And that, again, is back to our secret source. The answer, I don't feel so alone. I have 60,000 friends. In reading other people's honest stories, I don't feel so terrible. And there will be a time when that awful child tells you, you are the worst parent that has ever lived and I hate you. It happens. If you don't feel alone, isolated, lonely, if you don't feel less, you feel better. And that's power.
I said I had a tangential relationship with the village. The first introduction I had was a colleague, a producer of ours, saying on the mom's group. And you don't want to see it as a mom's group. It is a parents group. But I'm glad to say I see some masculine names in the book. But are you happy with the level of dad or male parenting involvement in the overall project?
It's actually a family group. You know, in the sense that particularly in South Africa, we don't expect the family to be. We don't expect what a family to be. I don't know. I wouldn't even like
typical
to call it
nuclear
traditional
family.
Yeah. We don't know how families are constituted. Often they are just constituted by people making a plan. I mean, again, that's our South African secret sauce. We make a plan. So I would love to have more men. I know that Facebook is not. Firstly, Facebook is in decline. It's last generation's tool. So we fight against that. A lot of people tell us they're only on Facebook for the village. But Facebook is also absolutely dominated by women. That's the first thing. Chat. I mean, I've always remember when I was pregnant and I was working on Cosmo, which was very woman. We could speak for 95 minutes just on. We were all pregnant at the same time. Those sperm were jumping out of the carpet there. But we could speak for 95 minutes on names for our children. We thought it was fascinating what we were going to call our kids. No man with any brain cell in his head would want to be involved in that discussion. So that kind of chat, I think, is not necessarily a father's favored environment.
Unfortunately, is also the societal and gendered responsibility that society gives mothers and women, that children, the values that we instill, the responsibility falls on women. And that is what we've decided as society. When we talk about gender conversation, that's it's totally made up. It should not be that.
One of the other things,
concentrate on children.
One of the other things is that, unfortunately, in this country where gender-based violence is such a problem, and we have such a high degree of male perpetrated violence and I forget the word, like, I mean, abandonment, let's say, and
only 60% of children born in South Africa only have a single parent registered there,
exactly.
And almost in overwhelming circumstances, it's the mother.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of the conversation as well is uncomfortable for men to listen to, because there are hurt mothers, there are angry mothers, there are abandoned mothers, there is conflict, whether sometimes the mothers also are in the wrong, by the way, in inverted commas. So, you know, I've heard from a lot of men that it is not a comfortable place for them to be in. And sometimes when men enter the group, it's not a comfortable experience because there is defense and attack from both sides. But I see that as our job to dismantle and to try and deal with and to try and build bridges. So I wish more men would join.
As we wrap up, Vanessa, I just want you to ask if you and Karen have self-reflected on your relationship with your parents. You said we were perfect parents until we had children. I had thought I'm going to be this type of father. A lot of what I do, good and bad, is a reflection of my relationship with my parents, and particularly my mother. And is this a period that you've had to reflect on? Well, what was my, was I the moody, sulky alien behind the bedroom door?
Well, can I tell you a little story about my mother, who many people listening to this podcast may know, the most incredible editor, probably the greatest editor of women's magazines that South Africa will and has ever seen. I gave her a copy of the book. Madam Jane is now 87 years old. She took the book very seriously. She had notes. She let me know that she thought it was very well put together, but that there were things that could be done better. There were ballpoint pen marks and edits all over the book. I did say to her, you know, it's been published already, Jane. She said, it's never too late to improve, darling. So, yes, I have learned to, I have always respected my mother. My nickname when I was a teenager was Hurricane Vanessa. I gave her a very hard time.
Vanessa, to me and what I read and what I experience of the village ecosystem, it's not a self-help book. It is a collection of South African nonfiction because it is real stories, and stories that impact on people and their relationships, stories that tell a story of South Africa, whether it's our past, whether it's our dynamics regarding gender relations, whether it's our economy. And I think that is very important. You don't want to say this is the rule book of how to raise children. This is just how other South African families have done it over the last while. And I want to congratulate you on that. And now that it is out, you've had the launch. What you're hoping to grow the community? As you say, Facebook is last generation social media. You have overall 200,000 people online. You have WhatsApp groups as well. Where do you take this community now?
I'm old. It's not driven by, it's driven by what can it do? I want it to keep on helping. I want it to keep on doing its job, which is to help. You know, you said this is not a self-help book. It's the opposite of self-help. It's an everyone else helps book. And that, I think, is the task of the village. It's to continue reaching out parent to parent, to be a meaningful net contributor to our children's future. And that's not my children. It's our children's future. I think there's a job to be done and can be done better if we connect with each other as adults and help each other.
Vanessa Raffaele, thank you so much for joining me on PageCast. I'm sure it's a conversation that I would want to continue, and I hope it's a conversation that those who are listening will continue. Thank you so much for listening to us. Back with PageCast soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of PageCast. We love hearing from you. So if you'd like to get in touch, please contact us at pagecastpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, keep reading and listening.